Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in new basement studios by the lake, we have a very slightly different themed
Shows lack of theme. I mean, as of late, we've been pretty bad at like the big theme shows.
Well, which but we have
neither
that
one of us have had quite as much time to plan as we normally would. So again, you and I bounce a bunch of ideas back and forth, and literally in the last 24 hours, you really picked them all. Although a couple more old ones, but a half a dozen ideas got thrown around by email, and so that's what we're doing. But of course, that means they have no fabric or fiber that ties them. So what we've done here is we've given them numbers and we've thrown some pieces of paper in the middle of the table and I'm going to draw.
We're going to do a lucky draw
about it. But
before you do that,
one of the reasons that you've been busy, of course.
Yeah, well, before you do that, while as of late our shows have lacked the big themes, we do have a couple of themes coming up. I know at some moment we're going to do our spring special and we're bouncing around a couple of ideas, either some sort of something TV show related, I would think, where we can play clips. It's either going to be theme tunes from comedy shows or maybe we're going to do a TV show face-off or something. But we're going to do something TV related.
Yep.
And then obviously we're actually not that far away.
I was about to say
the big summer movie preview, which continues to be huge in terms of our ratings. That's coming. And then we also have a special one-off theme this summer.
Yeah What's that?
Well, because I'm getting married later this summer.
What?
Yes. So listeners out there, I'm gonna give you two. If you're a female listener, it's not too late to cut in on the action.
What does that mean?
but if you're any of our listeners and you want to help celebrate, please, you can email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And you can make some sort of PayPal donation if you want to get on board the marriage train. But no, I'm getting married later this summer.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, of course not. No. And of course.
So what does that have to do with the podcast, though?
Well, because we're going to be doing a show. We're going to have live coverage from a wedding.
I'm sure
I'm
sure everybody in the family will be pleased that you'll be recording while you're getting married.
Well, let me tell you a short story.
You're going to have to buy those little lapel mics and you can bring it up to the.
I'm going to wear one.
Yeah.
Not during it, probably. Not during the actual moment itself. Uh-huh. But at the reception and the night before, we're definitely going to have some coverage.
You know what? That's not too crazy. Because you could just collect a whole bunch of, because obviously people could be telling jokes and stuff
and
like that.
There
could be some good pieces of stuff there.
Yeah. Which we can then use in, and we don't even have to do a wedding. We can obviously do a wedding special, but some week someone's just going to mention things and we're going
to
go,
oh. We have to wear like a sign that says, if you talk to Zeph. Or if I get one, if you talk to Zeph or Eric, you're being recorded. Like a disclosure? Or do we come back to them afterwards and say, listen, you were being recorded. It's actually a law about this. We'll have to check with the
there is a
the
law that you
staff.
Have. There is a law that you have to notify someone else if you're recording them. But I do know this.
I think in Virginia, at least on a phone, you only need one half to consent. In Maryland, you need both halves. I'll have to check on this.
Well, I also know if you're on a phone and if you're not recording the phone call, you can record what you're saying.
Oh yeah.
As long as you don't record what the other person says.
You might even be able to do that. You know what?
But you don't have to tell them that I'm recording myself.
No, but I don't even. I think as long as you have one part of a conversation, at least over phone, I think you're allowed to record in Virginia. The reason I know this is because when I was a young attorney, I think as a make work item, somebody had me research. It was during the Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Oh.
And you may remember that Linda Tripp recorded some phone calls, and there was a big to do about whether she was breaking the law by recording the phone calls. And I think the phone call like crossed the state border, like part was
in
DC, part was in Virginia. And I seem to recall when I looked up the Virginia law, now this is 20 plus years ago.
Yeah, it was 97, 98, wasn't it? Yeah, it's late 90s.
That laws may be different than they were then, but I seem to recall that Virginia allowed single party consent, whereas Maryland required two party.
That's interesting.
So anyway, we'll check on that.
All right. So anyway, we went last week. My fiance and I, we went to make wedding invitations, and I know nowadays with the internet, if you don't know anything, you can just Google what to do. I'm wandering and it's amazing. Obviously, I'm of indeterminate middle age. I had no idea I've been to many weddings.
Right.
I have family members that have been married, but I have no idea how any of this stuff works. And I didn't realize that you know, I always presume that a wedding invitation arrives and there's been some sort of stock wedding where you fill in some names and it comes. I didn't realize that you have to pick out everything that's said on your... Yeah, you have to come up with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, ooh, what do you do? Because we're not having one of those where the parents are announcing and inviting you.
Yeah, a little past that stage of your life.
Yes. So it's a bit odd to sit there and think, oh, I need to figure out how do you invite someone to your wedding? And we ended up with something very sort of traditional. You know, we invite you to share our joy and all this sort of nonsense. Mm-hmm. But it was a bit strange. Like, other than time, date, and place, for the first of my life, I'm thinking, oh.
It's not an empty space on the page.
Yeah, well, like, what else do you put and how do you put it? Like, you know, you just go, yeah, we're getting married.
Did you have any other ideas?
I did have some ideas, actually, which went down like a lead balloon. And this is why, while I have floated the idea of recording the wedding for posterity.
That necessarily has to forget about the legal clearance. We haven't actually had spousal clearance.
In order to get the legal clearance, I figured that if on the wedding invitation we could put the Atlantic Voice podcast presents.
Mm-hmm.
The marriage of Zeph.
Yeah.
Then right there, if you've been invited, you already see, well, this is a production. I know what I'm getting into.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's then we don't have to have wear badges going, you are being recorded.
Yeah, yeah.
People just understand that I'm at a celebrity wedding.
Very small print on the invite to go, should you choose to attend, you may be recorded.
Oh, can you put it on the backside?
Like this wedding may be recorded for quality control purposes. You know, like they say when you get on the phone.
Well, that's true though. But if you have a videographer at your wedding,
right?
What does that mean?
No, I mean the difference isn't like you're using those for personal use. I think the difference is if you recorded stuff and then you put it out. I mean, we don't do it for commercial.
Then again, have you seen our ratings recently? I mean, who's to say these shows are not just for personal use?
It's more or less personal family use.
So anyway, I tried to think, well, we could have the wedding presented by the Atlantic Voice podcast. Needless to say, that idea was shut down.
All right.
So, yeah, but there you go. But that's one of our big events coming up this year.
We need to fine tune our logo if we did that, you know.
The bottom line is I'm getting married and it's going to be on the show.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I think this could work.
Yeah. And all so right. If you're out there and you're a new listener, you need to tell your friends, you need to check out this show. These characters are getting married on it.
Are you going to get
not to each other? Obviously.
Are you going to get the recording gear that we can wear?
Yeah, the portable stuff. We have they're called Lanier mics.
Okay.
Lanier mics. We can, you know, we can do that and we can interview people and we can just do wedding.
Well, I think you
we
just
can
have your regular conversations. I mean, think about how many cool little snippets you can get.
Oh, easily.
Wedding.
Yeah. So, you know, easily.
People talking about stuff.
So anyway, that's the while this show isn't one of our big themed show,
yeah.
I did feel in the news this week we should prompt our big themes coming up this year.
You should get, I don't know if you thought about this yet, so, you know, they used to have the disposable cameras that you would have at the wedding. So now what they have is like an app that people can put on their phone, and you take the pictures with your phone, and live, they get uploaded to a central location.
Oh, really?
So you're there, you can see pictures of other people that are taken during the course of the wedding, and then you have this whole, everybody can access this big portfolio of candid photos. It's pretty cool.
And it's cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
Why pay some Joe photographer when everyone's going to be taking...
I don't know if this takes the place of a wedding photographer, but it takes the place of the people taking pictures and then... Because the old disposable cameras, you'd take them and then the people hosting the wedding would collect them up, develop them and all that stuff. But now, since you can do this all
electronically... But as an app, do you know what the app's called?
Should we assign our research department? The logo was a couple of geese in like a heart shape kind of thing. We'll find out as easy.
This is all things to do. This is all part of the marriage process is learning stuff.
It's not like it's tomorrow or anything like that.
No.
I don't think it's too hard.
No.
Anyway, so we have our hodgepodge and we've already killed the first
15 minutes. Yeah, we've already killed 10 minutes of the show, yeah.
So shall I reach into the basket?
And all right, so why don't we explain now what we've got going? We had a list of topics. We now have a basket with
six of them. I'm almost certain we're not going to get to all six.
No, but we have a basket with some numbers in there. My partner is going to pull out a number. We're going to go straight to that topic, and we're just going to roll.
All right. So,
yeah, we don't have that. I wanted to have like the lottery ping pong noise, but we don't have that. All right. So the first number has been pulled, and it is number.
It's a number that you used to talk about not doing. Arsenal Trump.
All right. So Arsenal. Okay. Arsenal's
football club. That is.
just to tell you, I'm actually kind of glad we started.
If people don't know, Zeph is an Arsenal fan. I'm a Chelsea fan. His roots go way back as a child. I just sort of picked it up in college age. But
you've been a fan long enough to be disappointed.
That's right.
And that's all it takes to be a fan.
I've been a fan long enough that they were bad, and then they were great, and now they're bad this year again.
Being a fan does not guarantee that there will be joyous moments. It probably guarantees there will be disappointment.
It's mostly
and the minute you've been disappointed, then that is your sort of fan virginity. You are then a legitimate fan, and no one can question your loyalty.
So
the only reason I mentioned this was because, obviously, if you haven't listened to our last show, go back and listen to it. We did spend about 15 minutes just talking about the Trump phenomenon.
Right.
Just the phenomenon of it. Anyway, so this week, obviously being an Arsenal fan, if you do follow any English soccer at the moment, Arsenal are having their annual meltdown from looking like front runners to embarrassingly plodding across the line behind a couple of other teams. I'm the sort of fan, obviously, because I now live 3,000 miles away from my team. I can watch it all on TV, but I'm one of those guys, I go to the blogs.
Sure. Blogs or message boards or same thing?
No, it's funny. I'm not an Arsenal message board person. I'm only a James Bond message board. And it's interesting. I don't know why. I'm more than happy to talk, but I don't want to get into message board conversations about sport. I don't know why.
And sports message boards tend to just cycle over the same thing over and over again, so it's not very...
And they get very... And I think sports message boards get nastier quicker. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's a couple of... I want to actually shout out one Arsenal fan site, and a lot of the teams have them. It's called Arsenal Fan TV. And now what happens is it's become a popular thing. There'll be a site where they interview fans after the game.
I heard there was a fist fight on
the recent Arsenal fan TV
between two fans.
I just wanted to shout that website out. It's great. It's very entertaining. Even if you're a fan of any other team, it's great watching other fans. I tell people all the time, because I've been a fan long enough, I'm not one of those who questions people's loyalty. When you're a fan, it's about being disappointed. I find that when Arsenal lose, going to this website and watching other fans put into words what you're feeling is actually very cathartic.
Right.
When we win, I actually find it very boring.
Right.
I already felt good. We've won. I don't need to see someone else tell me why it was good. But when we lose, there's all kinds of other people being interviewed, ranting and raving, and it's very cathartic. Anyway.
Misery loves company.
Misery loves company.
There's a thing that people like... commiserate.
So I went to another Arsenal. I've got a list of, I don't go to all of them. I've got four or five where I tend to like the writing. I like the opinions. There's one called 7 AM Kickoff, which is an Arsenal fan site, but written from America, hence 7 AM Kickoff.
Oh, yeah, makes sense, right?
And so it's kind of interesting for me because I live here in the United States. And so there's lots of, general fan stuff, analysis of the game. But every now and again, one of the contributors has gone to London for a game and he's put up his photos and, talked about his... So that's its niche.
Mm-hmm.
I went on the other day just to click on what's going on. And the whole thing ended up... There was a picture of Hillary Clinton apparently hugging someone who was once a Ku Klux Klan member. And...
Isn't that the plot of the House of Cards episode?
I don't know, but the whole post seemed to be about Donald Trump. And I didn't really read it because I read on looking for the analysis of the Champions League loss or whatever.
Football
I come in for football. I just found it notable that, the notion of Donald Trump, this person running for president, rather than any other run-of-the-mill politician, it's seeping into everything.
Yeah, right.
And there was a part of me going... Well, the website today sucks. Where's my Arsenal news?
Yeah.
Where's my Arsenal with a 7 a.m. kickoff slant?
True water cooler conversation in the modern sense of the word.
It is, but I was actually quite angry. I'm like, you're actually in the way of what I've come to. Yeah.
It's one thing for you to screw up America, but don't mess with my 7 a.m. kickoff block.
I appreciate that Trump has seeped into all areas of life.
Yeah.
But can we not keep our sports sacrosanct at least?
That's okay.
And I find it quite interesting because I know you watch NASCAR. And the other week, a couple of weeks ago, when the NASCAR guy endorsed Trump at a press conference, it turned into a big story like this. And I'm thinking, no, it's sports. Please stay away from all politicians.
Yeah.
Stay away from sports.
It would make life easier.
It's not your thing.
We wanted it to be an escape.
Yeah. So anyway, that was why that was a topic. I just found it fascinating that Trump has leaked into all areas of society. Then again, if Trump wants to buy Arsenal and spend his own money, come on down. I'll take your cash. Buy some players. Make us better. All right, let's go back in.
Next topic.
That's the sort of ping pong. That's the ping pong ball effect of you.
Coming back to robots. This is one we've had on the back burner for a little bit. Mostly this was precipitated by, you've heard, there's definitely more than one episode we put out before where we've talked about these Boston Dynamics robots. Robots that, like, you know, are spiders that climb walls.
The one that was a dog.
And they keep kicking it, so you feel this sympathy for it and all this sort of stuff. And they just came out. Go ahead.
Greg, well, can I just say, if you're not up to speed with Boston Dynamics and their robots, this isn't like the vacuum cleaner that rolls around your house on its own.
Not a Roomba.
These are robots. What always fascinated us from a couple of years ago, and I think it's one of our 2013 episodes, go deep into the archives and look for robots. This company, Boston Dynamics, they have built robots that move like living things.
Well, they're basically saying, listen, this is the best way to have things that get around. There's a reason that people and animals evolved to be what they are or be structured the way they are. So the four-legged ones, obviously, like animals, and they do.
I've always said, just Google it. They move.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're wires and metal, but the way they move is not like the stiff. And I'm now doing what we've always done on the show, I'm looking like a robot dance. But again, it's not a robot like that automatic vacuum cleaner. It's a proper robot.
Yeah. So what came out a couple of weeks ago is every now and then they'll release a video, and they released a video of a humanoid shaped one, meaning not it didn't look like a person, but it was two legs and it had arms for balance purposes. It could carry and pick up things. They had a video where it was bending over and picking stuff up.
Yeah.
And people would knock it out of their hands like they were messing with it, like a school kid, you know. But and then it would go and get them again. But it was walking through the woods. Like, so we're not talking about the little things that dance in your living room floor. We're talking about ones like you just go, hey, go across that hill and across branches and stuff like that. And it would walk. And if it fell down, it had a way to get up. Stand itself back up. Obviously very creepy and very weird.
Very amazing, though.
I've
always said that about this now modern generation of robots. And I know we talk about shows like Battlestar Galactica and stuff like that on this show, but the only criticism I would make of the human robot, you know that you're always taught to pick up boxes by using your legs.
Right, it didn't do that.
The robot doesn't do that. It just bends at the waist
because it doesn't matter. It's not going to get a hernia.
And I remember watching him, I'm thinking, ooh, that could be painful if the box is too heavy. But apparently not if you're a robot.
No, if you're a robot, it doesn't matter.
But that's the only flaw. But the rest of the time, it looks like a real robot.
Yeah, so that video came out on February 23rd.
We'll probably post this link because we'll post a link to it just for you to watch.
So what was interesting is when you and I had talked about that, it was the first time it was mentioned, they were describing this as Google's robots.
Yeah.
And we're like, I just thought it was Boston Dynamics.
That's what it was.
We hadn't realized it, but Google bought Boston Dynamics in late 2013, December of 2013.
Well, that was after we'd done our show.
Okay, so maybe obviously that's
the people at Google were thinking, the guys at the Atlantic Voice were talking.
Right. So
I hope.
So we said, well, that's an interesting thing because you think about like Google's going into a lot of certainly automated cars. It's heavily into and is clearly making a push to go in this area, and so you could see how the robotics things would.
Automated cars that apparently keep crashing into buses. I think I've seen all kinds of stuff on the internet recently that they've been crashing into buses. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm glad, as someone who likes to drive, I'm glad that the automatic car is currently not as effective as it should be.
So literally 3 hours before we're going to record this, when I'm deep in my prep for the episode, I run a search, Boston Dynamics, Google, blah, 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 you know, throwing some words in there to see what it'll come up with because I want to find out actually when they bought. So first article that comes up, so I find out bought in December 2013. And then the next article, which was literally, one was yesterday and one was the day before, one was on Bloomberg, one's on a tech thing, is they're selling Boston Dynamics.
Can I ask you a question before you get to that? Google bought Boston Dynamics. They weren't in a partnership. They bought
them. Bought it. Acquired Boston Dynamics in late 2013 as a part of it. I'm reading it's from Bloomberg, the Bloomberg article. Google acquired Boston Dynamics.
What's the name of the writer? Just because we'll shout the writer out. We always do that. It's part of our thing.
Brad Stone and Jack Clark.
There you go. Brad and Jack.
Put that out on St. Patrick's Day. Acquired in late 2013 as a part of a spree of acquisitions in the field of robotics. The deals were spearheaded by Andy Rubin, former chief of the Android division, and brought about 300 robotics engineers into Google. So this they called this their initiative into this, they called Replicant.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Weird, right? Well, I got, but again.
So now they're selling it, right? And as it turns out, apparently, and there's some other articles in the meantime talking about how Google was now becoming a huge defense contractor because Boston Dynamics, a lot of this development is based on DARPA research,
yeah.
You know, Defense Department research processes. And so apparently.
Yeah, because they're trying to create a Cyberman army to defeat the enemy.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, listen, the first application of some of these things is going to be military to keep people out of harm's way.
This is where the Terminator came
basically
from.
Basically land-based drones.
Yes, Terminator.
So the apparently, like, a lot of traditional corporate problems in that Google had its own robotics people, the Boston Dynamics people, and them were apparently not cooperating very
much. Didn't get along.
Boston Dynamics people wanted to do their own thing. And I think Google's notion of what they wanted this stuff for, while the defense stuff was nice, they were looking at the things like the automated cars and things like that. And so this did not really fit with what it is. And apparently, when this video, and by the way, so like Alphabet is now the Google parent company, so it's really Alphabet that owns it, to be clear. So when this video came out a couple of days ago along with the humanoid, I don't have the quotes in front of me, but apparently some sort of memo got leaked where everybody was like, Google was like, that's creepy, and we don't want to put out creepy stuff about robots.
That's
we want to put out fun, friendly stuff about robots. And you put this stuff out, and people are going to be creeped out, and they go, Google's creepy. We always think Google's creepy to begin with, and now you got robot people walking around there and doing this stuff.
Yeah, so. And you've got robot people and Defense Department contracts and all of it. Yeah, I can see how if you're Google and you're trying to project a, hey, use us on the internet image, while if
people have enough misgivings about Google to begin with and how big they are and all they're going into that you then say, oh, look, we have a robot army too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This starts to get like the bad Star Wars episodes.
Yeah, it's interesting though. If I am a top finance guy at Google, there's a part of me who thinks, what better way to increase income in one area than start winning some government contracts?
Well, listen, no doubt that there's a part of...
Lockheed Martin and all these guys do very, very well from just plugging into the government.
Nothing I read, and maybe I didn't get enough through it because I didn't do a lot of advanced research. Nothing said they didn't want to make money doing this stuff or they didn't see the potential. It was about the PR element of it, that the fact that they're out there. So,
yeah, but I do understand it from Google's perspective. I think all of us are always a bit edgy that oh yeah, they're tracking everything you can do on the internet. Which, to bring me back to our first topic, since myself and my fiance had tried to build some wedding invitations online before going to the store, we'd used my computer. So now when I go to my Facebook page or go to my Arsenal blog, the ads that pop up are continually sending me wedding invitations. And I'm like, no, that's a one and done situation for me. I'm not interested in wedding invitations anymore. That decision has been made. So yeah, that's part of how we are all slightly freaked out by how the internet and specifically Google know what we're thinking. Can I, while you look for some quotes there.
I was going to just say just real quick, Google's public relations team expressed discomfort that Alphabet would be associated with the push into humanoid robotics. Their subsequent emails were also published to an internal online forum and became visible to all Google employees. Quote, there's excitement from the tech press, but we're also starting to see some negative threads about it being terrifying, comma, ready to take humans' jobs, wrote Courtney Hone, a director of communications at Google and the spokeswoman for Google X. Google X is the in-house robotic stuff. Hone went on to ask her colleagues, quote, distance X from this video, and wrote, we don't want to trigger a whole separate media cycle about where Boston Dynamics really is at Google. We're not going to comment on this video because there's not really a lot we can add, and we don't want to answer most of the cues, questions it triggers, she wrote.
So again, they got out of it for PR purposes.
Yeah. Well, they haven't sold yet, so it's on the market, and there's mentions like Amazon apparently has a whole run, because they're drones, they might get into
it. I'm going to give you a name of a company that actually probably isn't going to be buying into this. Around the same time as the Boston Dynamics stories came out at the end of February, and they were on our list to do, but we never did them, which is why they've ended up in today's a grab bag of topics. Mm-hmm. I actually found a story on the net, and I actually have it somewhere, so I will also throw it up on the blog. From about the same time, Mercedes-Benz in Germany announced that they were de-automating some of their lines.
Mm-hmm.
And the PR line was that, well, we actually need the human factor to work some of the lines, either in the
cars. You're talking about factory lines, right?
Factory lines, right, yeah. Right, right. They were actually going to.
I thought you meant like the elements of the cars.
They were going to de-robotize some areas of manufacturing, because apparently the robots weren't doing. I can't remember what areas it was specifically in, but it was always felt that the human ability to make certain decisions was necessary in that part of manufacturing. And when I reread the article and stick it up on the blog, you'll be able to find out for yourself what it was. But I found it interesting that around the same time as this story in the Boston Dynamics thing, you know, a car manufacturer had, you know, made a big announcement that, yeah, actually, we're actually de-robotizing some parts in the manufacturing process because humans do it better. And I think that, to me, that was, for want of a better phrase, a U-turn in the thinking in car manufacturing for the last 30 years, where the robots could, the assembly robots can do it better. All the humans need to do is supervise. Well, Mercedes-Benz, who are building a luxury, you know, a product with a great reputation, are going, actually, no, we're going to shut down some of our robot assembly lines and reinsert some more human activity and decision making into the process.
Maybe people are cheaper than robots now too.
That might be it too.
Labor market.
But I thought that was quite interesting. All around the same time as up on the internet, there is the robot that now looks like is the wrong word, but moves like a human. I found it interesting that a major manufacturer was actually. Sure. Hey,
well, there was an
we're
article,
laying off some robots.
There was an article, not to get into too many Trump stuff, but article in 538, the Nate Silver website, talked about manufacturing jobs. You know, like a lot of the things are like, we're going to bring back manufacturing jobs. And they actually said there's quite a bit of manufacturing work has come back to the United States. Like, you know, we think about the car like Toyota has factories here and some other things have come back apparently. But the thing is, they come back and jobs that would have originally taken like 100 employees now take 2.
Yeah.
Because they're coming back in such a different form now that we're the upgrade with the automation. Yeah. And that might even be why they're coming back, is because we can run some of the more sophisticated things better. But the idea that you're now going to repopulate, like there's suddenly going to be this wave, even if you brought all the work back, you're not going to really bring as many jobs back as, or is it gone, because there's just not going to be as many people doing them.
So what you're saying is Trump is a figurehead for a cyber kinetic army. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't put it past him.
All right. See, all these stories are linked together. You're about to put your hand. Yeah. This is the sound of the ping pong balls.
Next topic.
Clacking together. Don't
number
go too
three.
Quickly.
NCAA brackets.
Ooh.
Because we are in the midst. We're in, as we speak, we're wrapping up the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. I'm sure almost everybody now has a workplace or friends NCAA bracket where you enter a pool and you pick all the games.
I'm going to cheaply tie this to our other stories. My bracket is already a disaster. I wish a robot had picked mine.
But everybody's. I mean, like so many upsets. I mean, this is the thing is, you know, this is the we've talked about this before, you know, about how the person who knows the least is wins your pool, your office pool.
It's a fascinating phenomenon.
Because they pick something weird.
Yeah.
But that's definitely happening this year because other than the fact that the one seeds are all still there and could end up winning the whole thing. It's a big melee this first week.
It is.
Like
a bigger melee than it ever? It always ends up. It always feels that way. I mean, and again, we don't
We've got a Michigan State, who a lot of people had picked to win the whole thing.
Yes.
A 2 seed losing to a 15 on the first day of this whole thing.
But that was only one, and then the rest of it was chalk. Everything else went pretty much the rest of the day kind of went with favorites.
A bunch of 12s, at least 2 12s beat 5s. And a couple of 11s beat 6s.
Was Friday day two was a train wreck of teams going out.
Yeah.
I felt the Friday.
You mean the days? Yeah.
Today, yeah. So,
right now, everybody seems to be holding chalk. Like, when we turned away from the Duke Yale game, Duke was winning like 46-19 or something like that. So I don't think Yale's Cinderella story is going to continue. And Wichita State lost earlier today.
But you know something? Cinderella never goes to the bowl. In the NCAA tournament, 9 times out of 10, she just makes it out the front door. Yale had their Cinderella moment. Then the next day, it is brutally ended.
I'm just thinking about the Cinderella story, right? So, yeah, sure, she was, you know, the put-upon sister, and she gets to go to the ball. But at the end, she has to run away from the ball. She doesn't really finish at the ball, though I guess then the prince comes find her and puts the slipper on and stuff. So I guess it works out for her in the end. I'm trying to think if the analogy is flawed to begin with.
I'm trying to get my prints and slippers, and have they been asleep for 40 years, and ugly sisters. I'm trying to get, I don't know. Well, that's my point. I get all these things confused. I feel that at the end of the day, if Cinderella's midgets, right? Dwarfs, little people.
No, that's Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty has the...
Cinderella is ugly sisters.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. I get all these things confused. Right. You know, in general...
She's the one who...
Frankly, if you just stuck the them
magic
all in...
slippers, or no, magic... No. I don't remember who... Some magic lets her go to the ball, and she's got the slippers, and the pumpkin turns into the...
Okay, that's Cinderella, right?
Right? And then at midnight, all that stuff falls away, and so she runs, leaves the slipper behind. The prince, who is so captured by her,
okay,
now goes around trying to find who fits the slippers.
Okay,
but and like all the sisters, everybody's trying to fit them, even though they know that's not the person. And he finds out that Cinderella, who's now back to being mopping the floors,
that's right. That, okay, this is starting to make sense.
And says, "Oh, you're the wonderful person. Come marry me.
Okay,
come rule the land." So I mean, at the end of the day, I guess she does win.
I'm not going to challenge your recollection of the nursery rhyme facts, because
there
all
is
these
a hiccup,
fairy tales
like, over
are
the,
sort of
at the evening part. Like she's not winning at some point, but then she ends up winning again.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Like, it's not like a pure upward trajectory.
Cinderella going to the ball actually isn't the big finish.
Yep.
That's the halfway through moment. But of course, but we always go, oh, Cinderella, like the ball. But everyone forgets that, yeah, you're right. At midnight, it kind of all goes.
Yeah. So anyway, brackets, though. Right. So brackets, they've become a standard part. I don't know if you did one in your office.
I did do one.
Yeah, I threw two into our big office thing. It's a 1 in 9.2 quintillion chance that you would ever get it perfect. So it's longer odds than the lotteries we were talking about.
Which is why What's-His-Name always says that if you do a perfect bracket, I'll give you $1 million or something. Who's that guy? Is it Warren Buffett? Buffett? Who is it every year who puts up $1 million in cash?
Quicken did one. I don't think Buffett put that
Someone a couple
up.
Of years ago.
The Quicken guy, his name, I forget what his name is, but he owns the sports team too out there in Detroit area, whatever it is. But anyway.
I find it an interesting thought. It's interesting to me how the NCAA bracket, I understand why it's become this big phenomenon where everyone jumps in because of, you know, it's compressed over a couple of weeks. You know, you have all these games. It's the notion of the bracket is very easy to fill out. But I always wonder, I find it interesting the reasons why this one is bigger than, say, you know, people don't do brackets for the NFL playoffs. And the NFL is the number one sports event in America where we all watch the Super Bowl. I just find it interesting why this event... Maybe it's the time of year,
yeah,
whatever.
Whether we should do one. Because they don't reseed, right?
Because they don't
reseed. You have
reseed,
wild cards, so you know who everybody is. Yeah, you could do a bracket.
I understand why people don't do brackets for, you know, the U.S. Open or Wimbledon, because most of us don't know, you know,
well,
90%
so
of the
big,
players.
Yeah.
Exactly. But again, I just find it interesting that this is the phenomenon.
A little bit of history, because I did find an article from Smithsonian Magazine. It's actually a couple years old from 2014 by Natasha Geiling, G-E-I-L-I-N-G. You can find it at smithsonian.com.
I had more difficulty filling out my bracket than I did my wedding invitation. Just trying to keep all these stories linked somehow.
Right. The first NCAA bracket pool, putting money where your bracket is, meaning like, you know, people might have picked games and things, but the first time somebody did it as a pool,
did the whole
it's
thing.
Thought to have started in 1977 in a Staten Island bar. It says 88 people filled out brackets in the pool that year and paid $10 in a winner take all. Apparently, in this same bar, like, so this must become a thing, in 2006, 150,000 people entered brackets through this bar.
Oh, just through the bar?
And the prize money exceeded $1.5 million for this one particular pool. In fact, the federal government took notice and basically shut down the whole thing, because it was at that point, it was not like sort of gambling and tax evasion issues.
I'm still hung up on the fact that this really only became a phenomenon in the late 70s.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So the pool, you know, the NCAA didn't always have 64, or now it has 68, but didn't always have 64 teams. In
was
when
it 32
first started,
or was it
39?
One of those where it was like an odd number that sort of there was certain, you know what I mean? Like this.
Yeah,
I mean,
at one point it had 8, you know, and so it moved up. I don't remember.
Did it go to 24? What I'm saying, the purity of the NCAA bracket is that it goes 4, 8, 16, you know, 32, 64. Mm-hmm. So when someone gives you a sheet of paper, it all makes perfect sense. But, you know, I think for a while the NCAA tournament had like 48 teams and 24, and so maybe right. it was only. I'd be interested to know when the NCAA tournament sort of went to 64. So in
75, it went to 32.
Okay.
So by the time of this first pool, it was probably at 32. And one of the things that this article talks about is the fact that it wasn't much of a gambling. Nobody would have been that interested because UCLA won it like every year.
Okay.
In the there was a big band of time, and it's not quite true to say it won it all the time, but that for a big chunk of time, they were always the winners, and like they didn't even really seed the teams, and nobody really talked about it that much. But I think as it got bigger and you had more random teams, and it also used to be if you were from a conference, only one team from your conference
it was quite,
got to go.
Yeah, so and it was quite regional, wasn't it, too? Like
you didn't have the regions at-large were, bids and stuff.
Yeah, probably. I mean, let's face it, the UCLA won it all their times because everyone out west was crap.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be mean. I don't want to undermine UCLA, but...
I think they basically... One of the things they said that like brought... And college basketball itself didn't get that much attention, but I think it was the Bird against Johnson era in Indiana
1979,
State.
You know, like
that basically kind of kicked it into overdrive in terms of people paying attention. In 1985, it went to 64 teams.
Okay.
And so then now it's 68, although a bunch of those play-in games are...
But it's interesting. Really, but it's interesting that 68 is sort of like, you know, I hear all the time when there's discussion about expanding the tournament by the people that run it and the people that are in it. So at a purely sporting event, a participatory event, there's always discussion about making it bigger. But the argument's always put out there that no one really wants to do that because it would hurt all the unofficial stuff. Again, if you did,
yeah. Well, I mean,
if
like
you put a bracket in front of me with 128 teams, I'm looking at going, you know, for $5, I ain't spending 2.5 hours filling this thing out. And at that moment, the event itself loses casual interest. Well, 128,
it's almost half of the eligible teams. Basically, I think it's 300.
No, but forgetting that, just purely from a attracting the casual bystander.
Somebody will send me an email correcting that. But
I mean, what I'm saying is the NCAA tournament, like the Super Bowl, is an event that attracts the non-regular fan. People fill out a bracket. Right, okay, yeah. People fill out a bracket, right. Not because they know basketball, but because either they went to college or their kid went to college. Exactly. Knowledge.
And at this point, it doesn't require that much time. You can just go click, click, click.
And it's still small enough where grandma can pick teams based on their colors and where her nephews and nieces and grandkids have gone to college. Do you know what I mean? There is something...
Pick the animals over the people.
Yeah, there's something very accessible about it. And I understand that's the phenomenon of it. But yeah,
this article says that
I wonder if you can go.
It went to that, it's really the past 10 to 15 years is when it's really exploded in prevalence.
And well, I think thanks to the internet.
Yeah, I think it's just part of that, and just as the things built, it's kind of like Super Bowl has become so much of a thing of its own. You know, people certainly tons of people did the Super Bowl before, but now it's become so. It's a cultural touchstone, regardless of whether you're into sports or not.
I'm gonna speak from personal experience.
All right.
20 years ago, at your workplace, there was probably one guy to organize the bracket competition.
Right.
And he had to photocopy things and give you bits of paper and send around envelopes, and you had to find them and put your cash in. And for the dedicated, yes, you were into it. But at the end of the day, it was still based on one guy or him and his buddy doing all this lead work, photocopying bits of paper and getting stuff to the offices. Now with the internet, you can use any number of online bracket things, and all anyone has to do is log in, create something, and then just send an email to everyone. So what I'm saying is the process of playing is now even easier. I don't have to sit there and fill out my bracket by hand and turn it in.
Oh, yeah.
I can just go click, 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 and it's done in 15 minutes.
I was trying to find this year is, you know, it seemed in past years you could go and you can see all the games online now too. And like you could have a bracket that would be your bracket. It would show everything live, the scores. You could click on a game and it would then show the video of it. That was kind of cool, but I couldn't find one this year that had all that.
I don't know. When I'm gambling, I don't care about it. I just want to know, am I winning? Am I losing? Because at the end of the day, that's what this is. This is gambling.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm not knocking it. I'm a gambler.
Lottery type gambling. Not
I wonder if you can actually enter brackets with those offshore companies for money.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
But, you know, because right now, because most people do it in a pool with people they know. Do you know what I mean?
You know, the catch is, I think there is some of that, but the catch is because it's everywhere. What's the payout to make money?
Yeah,
how do they set odds?
A pool
where everybody puts $10,000 in, you're not going to get that one in your office. But in terms of
how does a bookie set odds? How does a bookie make money? Do you know what I mean? All it is
they would just take a cut on a cool thing.
They're facilitating a competition. It's for the same reason that casinos don't really love poker that much. They make far more money off slots and table games than they do off the poker rooms.
I'm totally baffled about how Windows 10 works. Like, you open something up, it shrinks your window. I don't know.
All my products are Apple.
And my other computer keeps telling me, hey, don't you want to upgrade to Windows 10? I was like, nah, not until I
apparently Windows 10 upgrades itself, but without telling you. That's what I saw a story online.
It pushes it hard enough that you can inadvertently do that. Right. Hey, look, click on this box and you're done. Uh-huh. But I've avoided it on one of my computers. But I have
maybe Microsoft are going to buy Boston Dynamics.
Totally unsurprising.
All right, we ready to go back to the ping pong balls?
Yeah, we might actually have a shot at getting through all these stuff.
You pulled one out.
Order. This is about Nielsen ratings.
Oh, okay.
This is really more your thing.
Yeah, so let me tell you a story.
I'll interject.
Because I think I've always been fascinated by the ratings. And I know now ratings are not as important as they were 25 years ago because now there are so many different ways to get your TV shows. When we're talking about the ratings, we're talking about, you know, over the air TV, what was the number one show this week? Which is the number one network? Which shows are popular? Which shows have more viewers? You know, and again, over the air TV, and when I say over the air, I don't mean public or public broadcasting or the BBC where there are no commercials. I'm talking about commercial over the air TV. Everything is set by how many viewers you have. And so the rating system of someone somehow coming up with saying this is how many people are watching CSI, that is the backbone of the industry. Mm-hmm. You can't claim a show is popular and charge more advertising without actually showing proof that it's popular. Mm-hmm. In the same way that in America, 60 Minutes is always in the top 20 shows. Sunday Night Football is always in the top 20 shows. Therefore, if you're a network or if you're the producers of this show, you get to make more money from your show because there are more eyeballs watching. Anyway, I've always been fascinated, always like, how do they figure it out? Who are these mysterious people who, for the rest of us, our TV menu is being set by whatever they decide they like or dislike? I've never known anyone who's a Nielsen rating family household until this year. A couple of weeks ago, I got an envelope in the mail, and there were five crisp $1 bills.
Ooh, rolling. And,
it's free money. Someone has sent me money in the mail. So I'm looking at it thinking there's got to be some catch here. Is Google going to figure out that I've taken my money and now they're going to be after me for something? But it said...
robot money.
Yeah, basically it said, these $5 are yours if you give us a quick two-minute phone call. And it was from...
Well, they're yours even if you don't give them a two-minute
phone call. Well, yeah, but you know, we're
giving this to you.
We're giving it to you.
You'll give us a quick...
And it was from Nielsen Arbitron. I think they're now one company. It used to be two rating systems mm-hmm. and now it's just the one company. I'm a good citizen. So I'm like, you've given me my $5.
Well, you're actually not a citizen, but
let's not get into it. Definitely, you know, once I'm married, there's going to be no question of the legality of my status. So let's just say that right now. And if anyone at the IRS is listening to this, you need my permission before you record this as evidence.
The IRS,
ba-dum.
Not the IRS.
No, they're a different set of problems. Who's the immigration people? INS.
Now it's ICEA or whatever.
Oh, it is.
Anyway.
So anyway, I take the $5 and I'm like, okay. So I called a number on the little bit. You know, there's a little brochure that's come with it. They promise it's a two-minute phone call. I call the number. I have a two-minute phone call with an operator who asks me some very random questions about, you know, TV stations, just my viewing habits. I'm like, yeah, I watch a lot of sports. I tend to watch – I watch some of those local stations or little stations that show lots of old TV shows and movies. Yep.
Well, we know you don't watch pay channels.
No, I don't watch pay channels.
Pay for those.
So I had a nice two-minute conversation, and that was it. And I'm like, oh, well, there you go. I've just participated in a process that has existed for 40 years.
If you can make $5 every 2 minutes, it'd be a great deal.
A couple of weeks later, I got two $5 bills for a total of $10. Again,
were these equally crisp?
Brand new crisp dollar bills to thank me for participating in it. And I'm like, outstanding. I've just made $15 total. All I did was phone call for 2 minutes. A couple of weeks after that, I got another envelope with $10, just one $10 bill. Now,
crisp also.
Crisp. While $10 is great, I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't a wadge of bills. There is something exciting about a wadge of ones.
Multiplicity of the ones, right?
And they were, so now it was like, you know, we'd like you to become part of the Nielsen family, I think. It was a nice colored brochure.
Yeah, they used to call them back in the day. So when you were a Nielsen family, it's because most viewing was
in a household.
You had one TV in a household. Yeah. So if you're a Nielsen family. And I think that they ultimately had a box, but back in the day, you used to fill a log out. Like, in right. fact, when I was in college, I think we did a little bit of this. It was very weird.
Oh, I now know house. Someone. So we you're had, responsible for I was some thinking great we shows actually from 20 years ago going off the air.
That's we had the log, and I remember we were just like, because it was four guys living in an apartment. It wasn't a normal household in terms of, mom and dad and a couple of kids. Okay. But we're like, so trying to figure out how to fill it out. And
yet the A-Team got canceled. I can't believe that you guys weren't watching those shows.
That's when we used to watch Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, I'm glad you did, because I love that show. Yeah. Anyway, I had a little brochure, and it was inviting me to join the Nielsen family. And I actually really thought about it. And because they said somewhere, you'll get further rewards. And yeah. I'm like, sure, I want free money. But
every time they send you money, it seems like more. Right. Although technically, I guess then.
Well, but at the end of the day, even if they didn't, because I watch enough TV, and anyone who listens to this show knows that my partner and I, we are big culture vultures. We go to the cinema, we watch TV, we read books, we listen to music. There was a part of me feeling, I'm ready to be part of the process. So I start reading down, and I'm thinking, yeah, you can send me something for me to click into my TV. Then I saw a picture of a guy wearing what looked like a beeper on his belt. And I start reading, and I'm like, yeah, we'd send you this device that you can wear all the time. And I'm thinking, yeah, forget that.
Why would they have you?
I don't know. I just said, forget it. And I put the $10 in my money clip and said, that's it. I've got $10.
I wonder if that's just because what they're trying to do is make it convenient for you. And because now, obviously, they have a problem, right? Because people don't watch TV in a normal way. The DVR, you're watching stuff on the computer.
So that might have been.
So maybe it's really not like the beeper is tracking you. Maybe it's like the beeper is. No, it's not actually a beeper, right? Well, it's something for you to put your information on the fly.
Right.
Which I think, like, why not just put an app on your phone?
And to be honest with you, I wish I could give you these answers, but because I've been busy doing stuff like wedding invitations, I have not properly researched this topic for the show. Anyway, the minute when I saw this guy, the picture of the guy wearing the beeper around his belt, I'm like, forget that. I ain't doing this. Because I just didn't want to be wearing something at all times. There was something about that was freaking me out a little bit. One, it looked like I might have been like diabetic or whatever it may be. Or I'm one of those Joes wearing his phone on his belt, because I'm not one of those guys. I suddenly checked out of the Nielsen process. And I know at that moment, I probably turned down the opportunity to get $10 a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, that's a tough decision for me, because all free money is good money. But yeah, I was a bit surprised that it... But you're right. You've just explained it. Mm-hmm. Clicking something into your TV is useless nowadays,
right?
Because that ain't going to show you what we're streaming. That ain't going to tell you what we're watching on the, other forms of media. And I think if you're, we all talk about the demise of over-the-air TV and how HBO and Amazon and Hulu and Netflix are cutting into the traditional over-the-air networks. Well, it's also hurting companies like Nielsen. Because how can they do their job anymore? What's the need for them? And not that I feel bad for the Nielsen guy. Probably just giving away free money is probably hurting your business model as well. But I felt a little bad. But like I said, the point of my story was, it was a bit like being called for jury duty.
Yeah.
I've known plenty of other people who've been called for jury duty, but my number has never come up. It's a bit like saying, the guy across the street was audited by the IRS. Do you know what I mean? It seemed like one of these random things that you never knew someone... Or you knew someone who knew someone who knew someone who was a Nielsen raider. I just thought it was kind of neat that I was targeted and asked to be a Nielsen ratings person. Okay. And I would have done it because I have a great relationship with my TV.
Our crack research staff has provided me with some information.
It's that would be Windows 10.
The Portable People Meter is a system developed by Arbitron Nielsen Audio to measure how many people are exposed or listening to individual radio stations and television stations, including cable television. The PPM, Portable People Meter, is worn like a pager and detects hidden audio tones within a station or network's audio stream, logging each time it finds a signal.
And I wasn't doing
it.
It's
proven to be much more accurate than the old handwritten logs or wired meters, and is immune to forgetfulness of test subject called panelist. So that's really kind of creepy. I mean, so it's a thing, which you can understand. It can listen to a little snippet. There's apps you can get that basically can listen to the TV and be like, oh, you're watching this. Here's more information.
If they'd sent me an app, I would have downloaded it on my phone. I wouldn't have been freaked out by that, even though it was, recording phone calls. It was an invasion of privacy. But I wasn't going to wear this beeper. Huh. It just
well, yeah, I mean, find it suitably creeped out. There was something else that seemed to suggest that they could keep track of when you watch the like if you leave during the commercials, you skip.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
So this would do that too. Basically, if every time commercials come on, you go walk and you get a sandwich. You know, so first of all, it's a lot of sandwiches.
Yeah,
but the other part is they would know
your belt would be too big.
Really watching the ads. If everybody leaves during the first ad during Two Broke Girls, you know they know. Like the more lucrative spot to put your advertisement is the second or third break.
I'm the stereotypical channel surfer. Like I'll sit there some evenings and just kill two hours flipping. I suspect that if I had the beeper, knowing that that's what it was doing, I would attempt to just fry the machine by constantly changing channel.
Yeah.
Because that's what I do anyway. And I would be like, yeah, click, 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 and just send them. Nielsen would actually be paying me to send the beeper back because I would be a useless. This guy is of no use to anyone because he's not watching anything, yet he's clicking through everything.
Yeah, right.
So they're thinking, ooh, we can sell this one of two ways to the advertisers. Yeah, this guy's catching ads everywhere, or he's never catching ads at all. But that was why I didn't want to do it.
No,
but I thought it was interesting. Great. Again,
you're not going to look very cool with that thing on your belt.
No, well, that was the reason. Yeah. And then what would I do at the wedding? I'm going, tell me, why are you wearing a beeper at your wedding? Well, I have to show that I'm not watching TV during this time.
All right. Shall I pick another topic?
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, we should have had the bell for this.
The bell. Yeah, sorry.
Well, we didn't get the ping pong balls, but we're only down to two things, so it doesn't matter.
Oh.
So this one, Easter eggs.
Yeah.
So you had emailed about it. I did a little research.
I don't know. I just thought it was a conversation because I also know that you have a personal habit where you still paint Easter eggs.
That's right. So we have some old friends, roommates, former roommates in a group house who...
And I've never painted an Easter egg.
Never, ever?
No, I don't know. I mean, it's not...
We dye them. I don't know. Maybe they call
it painting. Whatever. They come out multicolored. I'm now looking at the bag just to reach for the bell. I just feel bad that the bell... We missed the opportunity to use the bell.
You know, the only thing I sort of found... Interesting. Where's my? I had a link for this, but
I mean, I get Easter eggs as a tradition. While you look there, I always eat the chocolate eggs.
Right.
Always.
It's funny. The Wikipedia entry. So I looked it up on Wikipedia, and the first paragraph talks as if this is standard thing. You know, these were eggs, but nowadays people get chocolate and plastic eggs.
You know what I mean? Nowadays, I'm of indeterminate middle age, and all I've ever known in my lifetime is Easter's great because you get some sort of chocolate egg.
Right.
And that is something since I was a kid, those many years ago. I mean, obviously there are other Easter traditions. I grew up in England where hot cross buns were an Easter thing. I don't know if they have those here.
I know the song.
Hot
cross bun.
Have you even eaten a hot cross bun?
Isn't it just like a cinnamon with an X across it?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But it's not really a cinnamon bun. It's just like a plain bun with raisins in it. And then it's either got an icing cross across it or something like that. But yeah, that was an Easter thing. Like your buns came with a cross on it during Easter.
It's suitably English in its celebration.
Yeah, and I want to say
kind
this.
Of the same
and,
thing with a minor and again, little
tweet. We also don't really do religion on this show, but I'm not quite sure how a chocolate egg or a baked product with a cross on it is in any way... paying homage to the reason
the cross,
for the holiday.
Because there's a cross. I mean, that's all it is.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm like, yeah.
The chocolate egg.
They hung the guy up.
So
we celebrate by eating baked foods. I'm not sure. I just don't get that part of it.
So
I get it at Christmas because that's celebratory.
Decoration of eggs goes back pre-Christianity, which is not surprising. I mean, like, you know, they're nice palettes on which you could
What do you mean pre-Christianity? Did they have Easter before Christianity?
No, but they had other sort of
Easter's a
springtime traditions. Yeah, but it's not
the notion
of decorating eggs did not arise.
See, this is interesting to me.
Christianity. So
before it was just like eggs.
So now I'm just reading.
Spring eggs.
I'm reading straight out of Wikipedia. Ostrich eggs with engraved decorations that are 60,000 years old have been found in Africa.
That's spring eggs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so there's, okay. I mean, there's an inherent symbolism
so Easter
in an egg
co-opted
to begin with.
The egg. But at this time of the year.
I don't want to get into this whole thing, but there's, if you want to do research on Christian traditions, hopefully people won't take this the wrong way, but a tremendous number of them, people have big theories about how they link into pagan traditions that pre-existed. And in fact, there's sort of a theory out there that the early founders of the church grabbed them as they were trying to convince people to become Christian. You know, we're talking about the year 400, 500 or something like that. Particularly, like you can read about it in the British Isles area where you had these certain traditions. And when you look at maybe not just there, but when you look at the timing of Christian holidays even, it lines up with other holiday, early pre-existing pagan holidays. And so the theory is that early church institution would basically say, oh, you have a spring pagan event about, you know, the springtime. Okay. Let's put this thing Easter here where God came back from the dead and born up, you know, like it's basically kind of analogizing to the existing stories and tying it in a way that went there.
So they were trying to induce you with goodies in the same way that Nielsen just sent me involved.
I mean, I guess it's a festival, but it's grabbing these events and things like that. So
that makes sense because ultimately, at the end of the day, ancient man used to worship aliens from outer space.
That's right, of course.
And they were gods that were returning to Earth in their UFOs.
Yeah. Which is not to say like the things aren't there. It's just that
eggs would seem a strange thing to load up on my spaceship.
There's a competition, you know, a sociological competition amongst traditions. And if you can sort of beat out the other tradition by using yours to adapt over theirs, and now look at it, like basically people would have to choose: am I going to go to the party down the street that's the pagan tradition, or am I going to go to this new religion one? And if you join that church and you believe in what they're saying, well, I'm going to go to this one. I'm going to skip the pagan tradition, and eventually the one wins out over the other.
And if you're sort of ambivalent, you're going to go, I'm going to the one where they're giving out candy.
Look at what happened to St. Patrick. Like St. Patrick's Day would have been a thing, and now it's just a big drinking holiday.
Right. So basically, the spring egg then.
Right. So like you had the spring egg.
The spring egg was a long time.
Egg has a lot of symbolism It's like, you know, life comes out of it. You know.
Yeah.
Granted, all life comes out of people, but the notion of an inert object that life springs up from is sort of a big thing. So the first Easter eggs were dyed. They were all done in red, and it was, you know, supposed to be the blood of Christ. It was
okay.
Symbolism. And so let's see. Christian tradition, a custom egg can be traced back as far as early Christians of Mesopotamia who stained eggs red in memory of the blood of Christ and shed it as crucifixion, et cetera, et cetera. The Christian church officially adopted the custom regarding the eggs as a symbol of the resurrection of Jesus. I'm literally reading right out of Wikipedia here, so everybody who wants to see
get upset with someone else.
Right.
Go to the bottom of the Wikipedia page, click on the number, get upset with that dude.
You know, and some theories have this like linked into Lent tradition. Apparently in early versions of Lent, you weren't allowed to have eggs, just like you're supposed to have meat in the Christian.
And a lot of people now give up candy for Lent. That's why it's a festival of chocolate.
Like the notion was you like cooked and eat eggs. It kind of doesn't make sense to me because Easter would be at the end of Lent. And so unless I guess maybe you're excited to have eggs again. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe like, oh, we got to the end of Lent.
Well, back in the day, that was the thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, eggs. I mean,
whether we would cut off our adult tradition of dyeing eggs with our friends. Like our friends have a bunch of kids, and so they were into the eggs. Now they're getting old enough that they're not into the eggs. And so should we really be dyeing any eggs anymore? And I said,
yes.
I think so. Mostly because I just
like, with you?
Like I almost never eat hard-boiled eggs. Like it's so silly.
Oh, so do you eat the eggs?
Oh, yeah. I always eat the worst decorated ones first, and I'm like holding out on the ones that I think are the best looking eggs. I'm really only last like 2 weeks, basically.
Okay.
But hard-boiled eggs are very, very convenient food.
I do like hard. Yes, and that's
why. Now they figured out eggs aren't even really bad for you, so I should be eating hard-boiled.
Well,
they are good.
They are good for you.
Well, you know, the big thing.
And I guess back in the 14th century, it was a treat.
For a long time, you know, the people said that cholesterol is all bad for you, but as it turns out, that food cholesterol is not so big a deal for you from a heart health perspective.
There's more chance of dying from scurvy.
I don't think that's true.
If you ate all eggs,
if you ate all eggs.
Yeah. It's not the cholesterol that kills you. It's the lack of vegetables that does you in.
If you ate all eggs, brings us right back to Cool Hand Luke.
I can eat 50 eggs.
Talked about it last week. George Kennedy.
Go back to our last show. George Kennedy passed away. We talked a bit about the career of George Kennedy, who won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting to me that the tradition of Easter eggs goes far beyond. I actually thought it was quite a modern thing, and I actually thought it was, obviously I knew it started with eggs, but the fact that, you know, I grew up, maybe this speaks to my own upbringing. I thought Easter eggs were chocolate. It was only as I got older that I realized that people dyed eggs. Do you know what I mean? I always thought it was just a chocolate thing. Because again, that's the generation I was growing up in. But it is, what's the Easter bunny? Because bunnies don't lay eggs. Where does he factor in Easter all of this?
Lays eggs. I don't know.
Oh, bunnies lay eggs?
Well, bunnies again are like, you know.
No, I understand that, but kind of do bunnies lay eggs?
I was going to say, like, Easter egg hunt. Yeah, I guess, obviously, if you didn't dye eggs, you didn't do an Easter egg hunt.
No, I've never done an Easter egg hunt.
We used to do that at my grandmother's.
And I'm like, this is what the president's doing in Easter, because they always sponsor the big White House.
It's kind of fun for the kids. They're colorful. You hide them places.
Maybe when
my grandmother used to hide them around the house and the backyard and stuff, and so she had a small amount of space.
Perhaps when Trump is president, the eggs will be full of cash.
Perhaps. Maybe he'll just not do them at all.
So, no, I find it an interesting tradition. Like, yep. I say, when I was a kid, it was all hot cross buns. Trying to think of what other Easter traditions that we had. The notion here of the big Easter lunch, I think that's true in England. You know, Easter, at some moment over the Easter weekend, you would have a large family meal similar to Christmas. But I found in my house, being a non, what's the word? Let me not get hung up on that. It would vary anywhere from Good Friday through Easter Monday.
Right.
But I also know here the notion of the Easter Sunday lunch is a big, definitely tradition in this country. You know, again, you got your Easter eggs, you got your hot cross buns. I'm trying to think what else. You know, Christmas more than Easter seems to be rife with the trinkets and symbolism of the season in terms of food and decorations. Like, people don't decorate the house at Easter in the same way they do at Christmas.
No. I mean,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, this household, we have some Easter decorations around the house, you might have noticed. Definitely have some rabbits on bicycles on the...
Yeah, but you're not putting lights up. You're not putting a blow-up rabbit outside your house.
No.
One of those ones. You're not doing rabbits lit up like those reindeers. Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah.
That's strictly a Halloween and Christmas thing. Yeah. Not that we have those.
Okay.
We haven't gone the inflatable route. But
I'm looking at the clock. We're about to go exactly to an hour.
I know. We have one more topic, but I don't think it's worth
getting to. It's not worth going in there.
It conveniently worked out because it was the least interesting. We can always roll it over to next time.
But we're not going to tell you what it is in case it shows up as filler in another one. And then you go, that wasn't very interesting. That must have been the one that was dead from the last show. So again, my only regret is I forgot the bell. I wish we remembered that.
Yeah.
Because it's nice having the bell out.
Yep.
Happy Easter.
And to you too.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Oh, I'm Zef.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zef on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.